Hello and welcome to another edition of CFTV Live. I'm Jared Stansberry, joined by my CrossFit coach, life coach, mentor, and former Iowa State football player, Jeff Woody.
Life coach seems like a stretch.
You motivate me.
Oh, thanks.
So then you're my life coach.
Thanks.
So there you go.
It's a very low bar.
My motivator.
It's a really low bar.
Today's episode of CFTV Live is brought to you by our friends at Agrigold, as it is every single time. They do a lot for us here at Cyclone Fanatic. They do a lot for the farmers here in the state of Iowa. And we are very appreciative of our friends at Agrigold for doing those things.
Always. And this is the first time I have been back on CFTV Live since the actual season was done. So the Christmas elf is coming back for maybe just a re-up for like a summer, like Christmas in July special thing.
We got to keep you fresh.
Yeah, know? No, I gotta brush the rust off. It tends to pile up and accumulate over the wet summer months.
We don't want you to rusty. Get like moldy or anything like that. We just got to make sure that
the elf costume that I have to wear seasonally just somehow doesn't collect mold in the closet. All right, yeah, I can do that.
I want to make sure that I don't have to. It's not like the Wizard of Oz when they find the Tin Man in the woods, and I have to come in and with like oil can and oil you up like for the fall.
I could say
that was a weird analogy.
Very sexual about that. I'm not, but I think you get where that would go. That would be going.
Yeah, that was. So we're gonna talk a little bit of football recruiting. You're not a recruiting guy.
Not really. I mean, I have general takes on a lot of stuff, and I know what I would be looking for, and what I would assume coaches would be looking for. But there's so much hit or miss with recruiting that like. We'll get into that later, but there's so much hit or miss that could go into it that rankings on an aggregate are good. Rankings for an individual are not. So we'll delve into that as we go.
It's especially tough for guys like us because we don't obviously have access to watching full games of a lot of these guys. The most you can get is a highlight film on YouTube or Huddle.
When I think the other thing that is really that no one can predict that, and again, talking about like an aggregate versus an individual measure, is one thing that you cannot know from any amount of film or interviews or even talking to a kid as a reporter is what is their drive? Like, what is their attitude towards wanting to work? Because if they don't want to work, it doesn't matter how talented they are. Like, I was thinking yesterday, so you asked me to do this a week or so ago, and I couldn't make it work until today. And the person, and I don't mean to throw them under the bus, but the person that this like that comes to mind with something like this is Donnie Jennert. Like, Donnie Jennert was and is probably one of the most talented football players that I played with. But mentally, Donnie Jennert did not have it enough to the point where his mental capacity, his kind of his toughness, his work ethic didn't match his physical ability.
Yeah.
So although he was, by every metric and every interview that you'd see with Donnie Jennert, give you reason to be like, yeah, this kid's going to be really good. And you watch him in practice when there's low stakes, and you're like, God damn it, this kid's good.
Right.
But then there's certain faults that were in there that, again, not to bash him, it wasn't his thing. And so like you can't, you know, you can be really excited for one kid or two kids or even a really high level recruit. Like, you know, you get a guy like Jaquan Bailey, like that guy comes in highly recruited, comes in being pretty productive. Now he's got some corners to turn anyway, but you know, that happens, but it's a really difficult game to be a part of.
But even then, you think about guys that are like an Arnold Azuna, who was on the depth chart for Iowa State a lot of the year last year. And I don't think going into the season anybody would have said, oh yeah, Arnold Azuna was one of the top guys in that class as a true freshman.
Yeah, and that's one of the things. Like a guy, you know, the quintessential example, it would be a guy like Jake Knott.
Where
Jake Knott, by all intents and purposes, if you look like retrospectively looking back at his highlight tapes, looking back at his measurables, looking back at him, you're like, why the hell was that kid not like a four-star recruit? And then retrospectively, you realize how right you were. But then at the time, you're like, well, he's got an offer from Wyoming.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, he seems, because Chris always.
I think that is what a lot of it is. It depends on who your offers are.
Yeah. But then again, like why are they not offering who they're offering? So it really is who else has offers? Yes. But Bo Williams went to Florida.
Yeah. Well, and that's the interesting thing. Sometimes on those 247 rivals and stuff like that, you'll see where the top 25 quarterbacks from the class of 2013 or something like that. And it's like five of them were really good. Five were okay to average
productive players.
And then the other 15 were bad,
right.
Or ended up at three different schools, or
right.
You know, play basketball at Grand Canyon University or something like that. Now,
yeah, and that's one of the things. Like the metaphor I like to think about it with is like BMI, like the body mass index measure. I'm in the health field, and so one of the things like BMI is it's a really good population measure, but it's terrible for individuals because it doesn't take into account like body fat percentage and stuff like that. So like me, I'm classified as obese. So do I need to be put on like diabetes medication? No, but by a population measure applied to an individual,
right,
then that's not accurate. Whereas if you take the aggregate of everybody, it's going to be more accurate for a population.
Yeah.
So like class rankings are generally a much better predictor of success than an individual ranking is. So like if you have 1 4-star kid, that likelihood of that 1 4-star kid panning out to be a really good player isn't very good. Whereas if you have an average of a 3.7 star class, that class is probably going to turn out pretty good. So it's a good population measure. It's not really a good individual measure, I think, in my opinion.
And I think that that's what's going to be the difference for Iowa State recruiting here moving forward, is that you're going to see if they can keep getting these classes that end up in the high 30s, the low 40s, you know, even get higher than that here in the next several years, that's when you start to see your program not just, you know, taking steps forward where you can see on the field, okay, they're a lot better than they've been.
Right.
But they're actually taking steps forwards to where they're winning games, they're winning 7, 8, 9 games and going to bowl games,
right,
and stuff like that.
And to counter my own point, one of the things, like, you know, the old phrase, what, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard.
Right.
Well, when talent works hard, talent with hard work kicks the ass of anybody that's not.
Right.
Like an untalented kid working hard, like, cool, you're a 6-foot lineman. I got a 6'8" lineman that works just as hard as you
right.
do. Well, that kid's going to win every time.
And that's the kind of thing where you look at the Alabamas of the world where
right.
they can get, you know, they're going to get those guys that are really freaking good, and B, are going to work hard.
Going to work,
you
yeah.
know? And that's how you end up, they get the number one recruiting class every year. They're top five. Or then you look at the teams like Florida State, the LSUs, the Ohio States. They're going to get those same kind of guys that they're not finding people that are slipping through the cracks. They're literally getting the best guys that are going to work hard.
Right.
And then they get them in there. And then you've got other guys that are coming in behind them. You've got the guys in front of them that are also pushing them to have to work hard too.
Yeah. And this is like the other thing about like the aggregate rankings. Like you look through the NFL draft, like what is it? The NFL draft, like most of them are 4 and 5-star picks in the first
yeah.
two rounds. Like
yeah.
almost all of them are 4 and 5-star high school recruits. So if you can, if you increase the number of average stars that you get in a recruiting class, or average rankings, or higher quality kids, you're going to miss. Like everyone is going to miss on certain kids. Like it's going to happen. Like
right.
regardless, you're going to miss on some recruits. But if you can increase the number of 4-stars that you get, if say I have no idea, I'm completely pulling a number out of nowhere. Say you 50% of the 4-star kids that you recruit end up playing at all. The other 50% end up transferring or quitting or getting kicked out of school. Like say 50% of the kids that you get there. Well, if you have 2, 50% means 1. If you have 10, 50% means 5. And all of a sudden you have 5 game-changing players.
Mm-hmm.
So as you increase the general quality of your stock, if you will, of your livestock, for a terrible analogy, is
yeah.
that you're, even though your percentages may not change right away, you're going to increase the number of hits that you get rather
right.
than the number of misses you get, which is, I think, one of the biggest things that Iowa State has been lacking in the past is like, oh, you get a 1 4-star guy. And maybe that 4-star guy is, I don't know what Leonard Johnson or KO's recruiting rankings were. I think they're maybe 2s or 3s or something. Say they're 3s.
Mm-hmm.
You get a Leonard Johnson or you get a Kelechi Osemele, but you also get a Cedric Johnson. So you're going to get a good 4-star and a bad 4-star. Well, maybe we triple those numbers and you get 4 good 4-stars
right.
and like an Allen Lazard, and you get that guy that you can keep, but then you get Hakeem Butler, and then you get Deshaunte Jones, and then you get guys like that, and over the course of time, Sean Foster, over the course of time, then those hits,
it builds up, yeah.
the hits make more sense than the misses do. So it's all an aggregate thing that somehow gets panned back to, like, if you can make the numbers and percentages work.
I think the thing for Iowa State that's so different right now compared to where they were in the Paul Rhodes years is that you're not seeing them getting those guys that it was like, okay, they'll have a few guys, they'll have the Alan Lazards, they'll have the Jake Campos, but then they'll also have
Pavlenko.
Right, like a guy that had like one other offer,
yeah.
and it was from Texas San Antonio or
yeah.
something like that, you know. They're drawing guys from maybe the state of Texas or Florida that it's like they were the sixth option for maybe a school in the state or something like that. And it's like, now they're actually getting guys that they've got those offers from Arizona. They've got Colorado offers. And even if they've got, you know, maybe they'll have a Houston offer, something like that. It's not just, they're not just pulling in guys that it's like a last ditch effort. It's like, we got to fill our class, so we're just going to take whoever we can get,
right?
You know?
Yeah. And I think that's to the credit of, I think one of the things that when they were looking for a new coach, one of the things I think I don't know if I talked about it on here, if it was just with Chris or just with you or something like that. But one of the things when they were looking for a head coach that I really was adamant that I wanted, and I, granted, I have no say in this, so I can't use the term adamant, but the one thing that I really, really wanted was that there was a pre-established head coach, because that is probably the biggest part of it, I would think. Again, I've never been head coach. I've never actually coached in college, but the thing I would think be the hardest is how you have final say on recruiting and what your philosophy towards that is.
Right.
So if you've been a head coach before, you know how to whittle down or how to delegate and how to trust people, how to be the final say, and getting that process worked out so that you can, you know, to not open this can of worms, but to offer 200 kids and know where they're going to pan out to by having faith in the rest of the staff you have, because you've done it before. And I think with Rhodes, he was still figuring that out as he was going, because he hadn't been a head coach before. And then that lesson, you know, you learn lessons as you grow, and he's going to learn lessons and say, okay, the way we did it last time wasn't ideal, so maybe we do it a little bit differently the next time. If hopefully that does happen, that someone takes a chance on him, because he's a great coach, he's a great guy. But at some point you go, okay, maybe that didn't work, so we're going to do it a little bit differently.
Well, and that's what you end up with, the stories like I told on the podcast on Monday with Tommy. It's like where, you know, Lou Iannone talks about a guy like Mike Warren, where he's going to Paul Rhodes and he's going to the other coaches. He says, we got to get this guy. Like, I think this guy's a stud. He's he's somebody I really think that we should put an offer out to, but Paul Rhodes isn't sure.
Yeah.
And it's like, and I think with Matt Campbell, if Lou Iannone goes to him as well, especially since they've been together for a long time, they've been friends a long time. If he goes to him, he says, I really like this guy, we should offer him. That's it. I mean, there's no more.
Yeah.
It's not, okay, well, let me think about it, or, you know, we need to vote on it or something like that. It's just, okay, you think he fits what we need? All right, go get him.
Yeah, having faith to delegate the task.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not just – Matt Campbell doesn't need to approve everybody that you see. He trusts the guys that they know
and
what
as
they're
long
looking
as,
for.
Yeah, and that's – I think that, again, like, it's just experience and having been a head coach before, of knowing when – how to train your guys and how to set expectations for your guys that they're going to follow those expectations, and then they're going to execute what you want to do, and then you just end up with 15 different versions of you, which is just how any other business, if you want to run successfully, needs to be done. Is like, I'm going to train the trainers, I'm going to train the ones that are doing it, and then I can just create 15 more of me.
Yeah.
And then I don't have to approve all of it, because I've trained them well enough, or I've taught them well enough, or given them enough experience that they're just going to do it the right way themselves.
And that's where you see the benefits of a guy like Matt Campbell, when he came up with Tom Manning, he came up with Lou Iannone and Eli Rashid and Tyson Veit and, you know,
Hofer.
Not as much him. He's been around a long time. But then, like, an Alex Golish, who is your recruiting coordinator, guys that have been with Campbell for a long time. Whereas with Rhodes, it was like, there was just so much staff turnover all the time that, you know, it's hard for him to really grow any trust in those guys, that they're going to know exactly what he wants, because in some of those situations, he might not even really know them that well.
Yeah.
It's someone that, you know, maybe in the situation with Mark Mangino, where, you know, he brought in his son and he brought in
Blaney.
Yeah, Blaney as the offensive line coach, and it's like, those weren't Paul Rhodes guys, so how do you know that he can really trust those guys to be able to go out and look, get what he wants on the recruiting trail?
Yeah, no, it makes sense, and I don't know. I feel like that's why Iowa State's in a pretty good place, because they're granted, everybody's biased that has gone to Iowa State, and no matter what, but most universities you go to, your alma mater, you have a high degree of confidence in. But if you kind of, again, I feel like you can objectively make this argument that, including, I'm not bashing the University of Iowa, because I feel like the University of Iowa is in the same boat, is if you can get a kid to campus, the University of Iowa and Iowa State are both really high quality educations, really high quality schools, really pretty campuses, really adamant fan bases, and facilities are fantastic. And now with the staff being like accommodating and helpful, and like there's, if you can get a kid to the campus, there's a really good likelihood that kid can
commit.
Want to commit, because it's like, oh, I mean, this isn't Tennessee, but this place is awesome.
Right.
And so if you can get them here, then you're going to be good enough to sell it.
And that's why you get so many guys that leave and they're like, like that place opened my eyes, you would never think that Iowa State's like that.
Right.
You know, like you would never anticipate it to be the way that it is. You would never anticipate the staff to be as welcoming, the people to be as welcoming.
The facilities
as,
be as
or, yeah, or the facilities to be as nice as they are with the lack of success that the program has had historically.
Right. Yeah.
All right. So I sent you a list of guys that I wanted you to watch a little bit of film on. Let's start with the quarterback commit, Real Mitchell from California.
So Real Mitchell is he's a short guy.
Yeah. He's about 5'10", 5'11".
Yeah. Which is not bad. It's just different. So full disclosure, I only watched like a little bit of most of these guys.
That's on me though. I didn't send you the stuff.
That was
early
also
enough.
On me. It's equal. We'll share in the lack of preparation on
there
this.
There you go.
But one of the things with Real Mitchell is that he's really accurate and he's confident in his throws, but his physical limitation is his height. And so you're going to have to be a little more creative with how you actually can deliver the ball when your quarterback's only 6 foot tall or 5 foot 10. So you can't, like, the windows and getting used to throwing through the windows in high school are going to be a lot different than getting used to throwing windows in college. Like the example that he reminds me of is not quite as much of a, he's more disciplined, I think, than like a Todd Reesing. But Todd Reesing's the name that kind of comes to mind is because when you have a quarterback that's short but accurate, and he has a solid arm. It's not like, you know, Brett Favre, but like he's a solid arm. As an accurate passer who's a shorter guy, the pocket has to move a lot, or you have to be really decisive in where you're going. So that's why a lot of the offense in the highlights that you're going to see are with him not necessarily throwing directly from a set pocket. It's going to be throwing from the move. Mm-hmm. And so if Real Mitchell does end up, and so this is not saying that he won't, but like if he does end up committing to Iowa State fully, like formally getting to Iowa State, getting to campus, I wouldn't expect him, even if Jacob Park, he'll be a junior this year, so he'll be a senior next year. So that's the time when Mitchell is redshirting. And then the year after that, I still wouldn't expect him to play for another year or two after that. Because when you, especially with the way that Manning builds his offensive lines, Julian Good-Jones is likely going to be your center, right?
Right.
He's 6'5".
Yeah.
That's your shortest offensive lineman. And so if you're 5'10", trying to see through that, not only do you have to, your pre-snap reads have to be perfect, you have to get used to throwing between guys because your release point is going to be at Sean Foster's head.
Right.
So it's going to take a lot of acclimation time, and it'll be probably frustrating for a year or two of getting him to understand how to throw from the pocket. He's going to be able to do these like James Capello when he was at Iowa State. I love playing with James in like redshirt scrimmages. Mm-hmm. So much fun. But you get him outside the pocket, that dude can, he's freaking a maestro of just being able to conduct everything, put it where he wants to. But having the time, patience, and work to put in, how do you throw from the pocket when the offensive line is 7 inches taller than you are and the defensive line is coming at you? Like getting used to throwing through those windows is really the limitation of a short guy. But what strikes me well about him is that he's got a quick release, he's accurate, and he's able to move and accentuate the strength that you'd have as a shorter quarterback of throwing from outside the pocket.
And I think the biggest thing for him is that he's like an elite level athlete,
right?
Too, he's one of the best track runners in the state of California, or one of the better sprinters. And he one of those highlight tapes, I don't know if it's the one that I sent you, but it's like the first play that they had of the season. They got backed up to the 2-yard line against St. Xavier in Ohio, which is one of like the big high school football programs, and he took a read option and went 98 yards like on the first play of the season.
And stuff like that you cannot teach or coach, which is where, like, if he can have the patience to develop how to throw from inside the pocket, like Seneca Wallace was a great, fantastic quarterback because he did all the crazy stuff that he did.
Right.
But in order to do that crazy stuff, you have to be a threat to throw. So that kind of explosiveness is going to be there. He's always going to have that. It's just honing in and training, like, how do you make yourself viable from inside the pocket? If you can make yourself viable from inside the pocket, everything else is just absolutely just freaking gasoline on a fire.
That's when you are the difference between being Seneca Wallace and being dangerous, like, on all levels of being a quarterback, and being like Taylor Martinez.
Right.
You know, like, where you, at moments, you can be electric. You can be, look like one of the best players in the country, but then the next, you're like, you're throwing the ball 5 feet over
now,
people's heads
granted,
and stuff like that.
Real Mitchell throws a much better ball
than
Uncle Rico Martinez.
Yeah. Man, that guy was
the worst delivery.
They played like at the same level of high school football in California, so.
He
Taylor Martinez High School is beat Rion Mitchell's last
year. He actually throws a football like this, though, rather than like this.
Yeah.
Which I think he like throws
he
like
was,
a frisbee.
He was close to being your teammate.
I heard rumors of that story, but I wasn't sure of like how true they were because of like someone.
There was a lot of different times where everybody thought he was leaving. So
yeah.
I don't know how.
I don't know the validity of any one of those things.
All right. Next one I had for you was Sterling Galbon.
Sterling Galbon, you mean Josh Lenz version 3?
Yeah, yeah.
He's gritty, coachable, surprisingly athletic, quick. First one in, last one out. High motor, wide receiver.
Yeah.
Gets in and out of
shifty.
Shifty, yeah. Good route runner. No, he's a white guy,
yeah.
And he's really athletic. Like, you take away the fact that he is a white dude, he is in the same vein as a DeShonte Jones or a Trevor Ryan. He's a slot. He's an interior receiver who could probably play outside if he has to. But again, kind of reading through the tea leaves of what Campbell has done, it looks like they like big receivers outside, which
right.
I love that. They like big receivers outside, and they want smaller receivers that can get in and out of traffic on the inside. So Galbon is how you pronounce it, right?
Yeah, it's Galbon, yeah.
Galbon. So yeah. Galbon is in the same vein as the DeShonte Jones, Trevor Ryan, Josh Lenz. I don't think he has the same, like Jarvis West in that same category of guys like that can get in and out of traffic that are going to be really crisp on the routes that they run. And if that kid can put in the work that it seems like he would want to, then he's going to end up being just another step in the line of that, of a guy that can play, all right, well, Galbon's on the field. Is he playing a slot tailback? Is he playing like a tailback just out of the backfield, detached?
Right.
Is he number one, number two, number three? Is he playing? I mean, you can do anything with him because he's got the versatility. And he's not a small dude. He's, what, 6 foot, 6'1"?
Yeah, yeah.
He's not a small guy.
And he's pretty built, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he'll be a pretty – I think he ends up being a very solid receiver. I don't know what type – again, it all depends on work ethic, but he seems like a guy that's going to fit right in step with the slot receivers that Iowa State has had in the recent past, which is actually a pretty decent list.
And I mean, that's a list that is going to continue to get even better, because if you look at that group, I mean, outside of Allen, but you've got Hakeem, who's still young. You've got a Jalen Martin, who has not even stepped on the field yet.
DeShonte Jones.
Yep. Carson Epps, who's been pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got Josh Johnson, who came in the last class. Like, this, the receiving group is as deep as any that Iowa State
right.
has. So that's it. To me, that would be a benefit to any young receiver that's looking to come to Iowa State. Maybe you're not going to get catches as a freshman,
yeah.
but you're going to have guys that are in that receiving room with you that are pushing you to get a lot better. And if you want to get on the field, you're going to have to work hard, because that's the only way you're going to get the ball.
And I think that's a really underrated aspect of why position groups at certain universities will stay so successful for such a long time. Like, if you look at linebackers for a while at Iowa State, starting with what, like Jesse Smith, or even if you go back to like, I don't know who was there before Jesse, but say just working back to that, because that's when they had that all conference streak. And then you go Jesse to AJ and Jake to Jeremiah George, and all those guys went to the NFL, and they were
right.
what, it's like for like 7 years, there was just an all-conference linebacker at Iowa State. Well, because the precedent was set of, this is how you work in this room. This is what's expected of you.
Right.
And then the younger guys learn that. And then as soon as the next talented kid comes in, then, all right, this is the precedent that was set is still there. So I would push that back to Lenz having set that of, because Lenz was a captain when he was there. Like a guy like Josh Lenz is, this is what's expected of you in this room. And then Alan Lazard took that and even raised the bar. And now that Lazard's in the room and he'll be a two-time captain of saying, okay, this is what's expected of you in this room. Then guys like Butler and Jones and Trevor Ryan are taking that bar and continuing it.
Right.
And then as soon as Alan graduates, then the bar is still there. So if you can continue guys that are filling in lane after lane after lane, this is what is expected of you in this room, which is why, you know, Penn State linebacker you, or which is why, you know, Iowa and offensive lineman, which is why you get such successful season after season after season after season, is because you get like, this is what you do. If you're in this room, this is what you do. You want to dick around, get out.
Right.
And so they set a precedent for success, which is why if you track back, you know, to Josh Lenz, to Alan Lazard, to guys like that, that receiving room looks like it's going to be successful for a really long time. And Coach Gasser's fantastic.
Right. This has nothing really to do with recruiting, but kind of along that same vein. Do you think that could be where really a guy like Joel Lanning moving into that linebacker room
yes.
could make the biggest difference?
Yep. Yep.
I mean, he could be good on the field, but at the same time, his leadership could be the biggest difference.
Yes, and that would be really good for a guy like Willie Harvey.
Yeah.
Is because I don't know Willie Harvey at all, so I'm not saying he does or doesn't, but I do know Joel Lanning. And with Joel, he's a very matter-of-fact, this is what you're doing. If you're not doing it, shape up or get out.
Right.
Like, he's a very matter of fact guy in that sense of, this is what's expected and this is what I want you to do and this is what I'm going to do. Come along. And so with a guy like Joel, this is what's expected of you in the room. The younger guys that are talented, that are redshirting or just, you know, first or second year guys, go, oh, okay, this is what's expected for success. Then again, that tradition continues forward, and all you can do is feed that success forward. So culture builds culture.
Right. And I would say that, I mean, of anybody on the team, he's got to be one of those guys, with as willing as he was to not only change roles, but he was another one of the ones that kind of led the charge when Matt Campbell came. He was like, yeah, we just told people if they don't want to be here, then...
Yeah, I would say him and Allen and Kamari are probably your three guys that... And Mitchell Myers when he was there. But those, right. Obviously, those are your captains. But him, Joel, Allen, and Kamari are probably your pace setters of, this is what's expected for work. This is what is nothing less than this will be acceptable.
Right.
Nothing less than this attitude will be acceptable. Let's go. Get your shit together or leave.
Yep. All right. Next one, I think, was Trevor Downing, the offensive lineman from Creston.
So Trevor Downing is a big kid.
Yeah.
Really, he's got active feet. He's long. I think he's got enough weight, but he's a little light in the strength department, which every single freshman offensive lineman is. Even Foster was. So I really like where his potential is. I don't know if he's going to be an interior or an exterior lineman, because he's like, what, 6'5"-ish, 6'4"-ish, which is kind of a tweener between a tackle and a guard. I bet he ends up shifting somewhere inside, being either a guard if they can put weight on him. But we actually played, so I coach at Roosevelt, and we played a scrimmage against Creston. And the tackle that had committed to Iowa and then Downing, both of them were at tackle. And there was one play where they took a combo block, and they took our three technique 27 yards backwards. And Downing literally picked the guy up. So he's really freakishly talented. And honestly, any offensive line commit that goes to Tom Manning, I have full confidence that Manning's going to turn that kid into a good offensive lineman.
Right.
Because objectively, he won the Broyles Award for best assistant, or the offensive line, whatever the name of the offensive line coach of the year. Like, he won that.
Yeah.
Like, objectively, he is one of the best in the country. And then you bring in a consultant that is as highly regarded as anybody else. Mm-hmm. You have offensive line success like built in. So Downing, being long and athletic with good feet, he's going to turn into something pretty successful.
And I think the big thing, just to, like, with the recruiting wise, the big thing for him, I think that you might be able to speak to this, is being able to beat Iowa to get a guy like him who's a top
in state,
top 2, 3, 4 level prospect in the state of Iowa. And not just that, but he's an offensive lineman.
Right.
Iowa has owned those kinds of guys.
And objectively, like, I feel like I'm pissing some people off by being so like nice and platitudes towards Iowa. But if I'm an offensive line, if my child is an offensive lineman that has 4 stars, like a guy like Ross Piersbacher went to Alabama. Mm-hmm. How many successful offensive linemen have Alabama produced versus Iowa? Iowa almost multitudes more successful linemen in the NFL than even Alabama does. So that is the place where most of them go. So to get him away from that it's huge. It's a huge win for Iowa State, because again, objectively, you look at the success that's been had. To steal that kid from out, or to not steal him, but to win that battle against Iowa for that kid, it's huge, because that kid has, again, length, size, talent, and you can get him in 4 or 5 years of developing him into a football player. That's a pretty salty offensive lineman by the time you're done.
I had Christian Young, safety from Texas.
Didn't watch him.
Okay, that's fine. He's the newest Iowa State commit for what it's worth. But did you watch both the running backs?
I did watch both the running backs.
Okay, let's start with Tajon Henry.
Tajon Henry, that kid's fun to watch.
Yeah.
That kid's fun to watch. He's got he's a very downhill guy, which is good. He's not big. I mean, he's built like a brick house, but he's not a physically intimidating guy.
He's a one-story brick house.
He's a one-story brick house that is double reinforced with brick.
There you go.
It's like cinder blocks inside a brick. But no, he's the thing that I like about him that is generally harder to teach with new running backs that translates really well is that there's a natural understanding of pace. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of high school running backs, and he ran a spread-ish system. It looked like a lot of pistol, but they ran a spread-ish system, and that's probably why he's good at pacing stuff. But you can't run, like, a lot of times high school running backs, when they're really talented, are like, I'm faster than this entire team. I'm just going to sprint the whole time.
Yeah.
Well, if you never learn how to set stuff up in high school, it's a really hard adjustment to being like, oh, I have to slow down. Like, I can't outrun Jamal Wiltz. Like, right. I'm not going to sprint faster than him. So I can't just take a corner. So I have to set this up, get a guy in position, and then go. And that's what Tajon Henry actually understands already. Maybe he doesn't, like, verbally articulate it. Doesn't, like, say, hey, I was doing this to do this to do this. But how he plays is he plays with pace when he needs to play with pace. And then once he gets his foot in the ground to go, it's gone. So I think because of his stature, he's going to have to put on weight. He's going to be a little muscle hamster. Like, he's going to have to put on just bulk. Otherwise, that's a lot of punishment to take, even if you can get glancing blows. Look at a guy like Kevontae Turpin. Like, Kevontae Turpin is a really solid dude, but he's missed 4 or 5 games a year with injury every single year he's played because he's little.
Yeah.
And so if you're going to be that size, which he is, you can't change that, he's going to have to bulk up a little bit. So I would assume that he would redshirt, especially because the backfield that Iowa State has
is really good.
Is stupid, even though Kinnae's not there. Between Montgomery and Mike Warren, like, between those two, you're going to have plenty of success, and it's going to be really difficult to weave somebody in there.
Well, and by the time that he got here, I mean, Kinnae would definitely be back in the mix. And I think even this year, he'll be right on that edge.
Kinnae being able to play?
Yeah, I saw him walking around, man. He doesn't look like somebody that hurt his Achilles.
That's good. If he can play, it's great.
Yeah. That's kind of what I keep telling people. It's like, if you can get 8 games out of him, at this point, that's a bonus.
Yeah.
You can't plan on it, but if you can get that, then...
Darn it.
Yeah.
So now our returner has to be DeShonte Jones or Trevor Ryan or Alan Lazard. Shoot, what are we going to do?
Right.
But then you get Kinnae back in there. That's like, all right, you have a whole chocolate cake. I'm also going to give you another chocolate cake.
Right.
Like, it's all good stuff. There's no downside to either one of us. Just nicer to have one.
Well, and you talk to people at Iowa State, and it's like, we've had people that have had this injury before, but we've never had anybody that's had this injury while being incredibly explosive, like an elite level of explosiveness while still having an Achilles injury like
6'10"?
That.
Didn't he high jump 6'10"?
Yeah, something like that.
At like 5 foot 10 or 5 foot 11.
He's like a state champion in 200. Like, yeah.
He's a freak.
He's just stupid.
Yeah. Stupid fast.
All right. Then the last one was Johnny Lang, a running back they just added to the class. He kind of has an interesting story. I don't know if you've
heard. I don't know what that story is.
He played his junior season at Manatee in Florida,
where Quentin Pompey went.
Yeah.
And Bundridge.
Yeah. It's been quite. They pump out high school recruits there like it's nothing. But he was like the state player of the year that year. And then he got in trouble legally, and he moved to Utah, and then he played quarterback in like a triple option scheme and led them to the state championship in Utah, and then he didn't qualify anywhere. And
he's a bigger dude,
went
right?
He took junior college classes and stuff like that, and now he's going to Iowa State.
He's a bigger
dude,
right?
He's only like, he's short too.
But
he's big, yeah.
Built.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think his thing is like, that I was watching him is just top end stuff. It's just freakish, stupid top end.
And that's what a lot of people that I've talked to, it's like, I mean, obviously, this would be, like, best case scenario. But he's, like, a Darren Sproles type kid. Where it's just, like, he's just so freaking fast and so shifty that you, no matter how small he is, he gets lost and then all of a sudden he's just gone.
Yeah,
you know?
And that's, like, the cool thing that I like. I mean, clearly, with how they used 2 quarterbacks last year and how they managed, I think, Mike, he dug his own grave a little bit, but then he started to dig himself out of it. Just sophomore stuff happens. But like with the creativity that they've got, with the offense that they kind of the flexibility of the offense that they have, a guy like that can be an absolute just switchblade in an offense where you can put him anywhere, which is what they do with Darren Sproles, which is what I expect. Again, I'm not comparing these two like at quality, but in style of like Christian McCaffrey, where what Stanford did with Christian McCaffrey is, you're going to give him carries in the backfield, but you're also going to make him the number one threat on routes, and you're going to make out of the backfield, and then you're going to make him the number one threat as a wide receiver, and then you're going to make him the number one threat as an outside wide receiver. You're going to motion him in. You're going to jet sweep stuff. Like, you have a huge amount of stuff that you can do with a guy like that, where a guy like David Montgomery, a guy like Mike Warren, even Kanae Nwangu falls in that same category if he's got hands like I think he does. Then you've got more true tailbacks like Montgomery, like Warren, like Tajon Henry. He's a little bit kind of floating towards that tweener side, but he's more of a true tailback. But you have kind of a multitude of just people. Like, you have good players, and then the responsibility of the coaches and the coordinators is like, all right, we've got this stud that plays some position that's almost a wide receiver, that's almost a running back, that's almost a whatever. How do we get him the ball? How do we get him the field? That's the responsibility of the coaches. Take talent and let talent work.
And I think that's what I really like about Matt Campbell. Even when you just listen to him talk, he's like, it's like, I don't care what position they play. If they're one of the best football players, if they deserve to have the ball in their hands, we're going to get the ball in their hands, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah, we're going to make a talent. Like,
we'll make a position for
them. We'll make a position for
them,
and we'll do something with it.
Right.
Which is where guy out of Marquise Goodwin out of Texas.
Oh yeah.
A guy like that, where they would, or no, Tavon Austin, excuse me, Tavon Austin. That's the kind of thing, because there would be times when West Virginia would line up Tavon Austin in the backfield and just give him 22 carries in a game, and then the next week he wouldn't touch the ball out of the backfield. It would just be a slot receiver. So that's the guy I was thinking of, not Marquise Goodwin, but a guy like Tavon Austin of that kind of versatility.
Yeah.
Where now when he plays in the NFL, he's a true slot receiver. He's a true wideout. But in college, it was like, all right, where is he and what is he doing? Because he does everything for this offense. So a guy, it's Jones, right?
Lang.
A guy like Lang is the same type of capability of, you have 22 carries that you can give him, or you can give him none,
right?
Put him at slot receiver, put him out as kind of a slash back, and be like, oh, okay, we're going to get 9 receptions this week, and put him at punt returner.
Right.
How much fun would that be with him and Kane?
Yeah, that'd be big time. Those guys can run.
That's real fast.
See, that's a big difference with this roster compared to what it had been. You just look at up and down, it's like, okay, well, that guy's really fast. That guy's really fast. That guy's really fast too. Not many guys on there that you're like, well, this guy, he might know what he's doing, but he's slower than hell, so it doesn't really matter.
Yep.
I don't
know who you're talking about with that.
I was going to say, maybe not this guy, but some of the other ones. But
gritty, coachable, first one in, last one out.
Always. Thanks, man, for coming in.
Yeah, not a problem.
Thanks again to AgriGold for sponsoring CFTV Live. We will be back next week. I'm not sure what we're going to do. Probably be me and Tommy, but we'll figure something out for CFTV Live next week. Thanks for tuning in or listening to the podcast. Have a great rest of your week, everybody.